I am in the midst of it with you, and you're never alone. And that's why I kind of start out every one of my prayers that I pray with people, you know, on Facebook Live. I start off with I get in there somewhere. I love you, and you are not alone. We are in this together. We're all connected, whether the world wanted you to let you know that or not. But now it is letting us all know how connected we truly are.
This is the Compass Podcast, where we look for the divine in the everyday. Things are a little weird right now. To put this in context, this episode releases on April 1st, 2020. If you're listening right around that date, you know just what's going on, enough said. But if you've clicked back to this episode over the space of time, well, we're living through the COVID-19/coronavirus scare right now. That means that for all of us involved in this podcast and in the communities we work with, we're all social distancing, isolated, working from home or out of work, and cut off. Recognizing God's divine work is most easily done in community, but right now, we're struggling for community because we're so isolated. So that's where we've kind of focused our attention for this episode. In light of our new parameters of isolation, how do we connect in spiritual community? A lot of faith communities have stepped up their online worship game. I spent last Sunday surfing from like one live stream to another across Facebook and YouTube. There are a lot of online discussions. And then there are folks like DG Hollums, who set aside some time to talk to me and Pierce about his online community. DG is a pastor, but he fashions himself as a New Age friar. When you go check out his videos online, you'll definitely see he's embracing the part. Aside from his appearance, DG seeks to provide spiritual community through online contemplative practices. He's taken to Facebook several times a day to be present, to connect with people, and to call our attention to where God's Spirit is making a move in our lives, all while we're socially distanced. And while this practice has been accelerated and focused by coronavirus, it's something that DG sees as being a permanent part of spirituality in the 21st century. The community DG is overseeing is called the Order of the Trinity. You can find it on Facebook. Of course, we're linking to it wherever we can. Pierce and I got to talk to DG. Oh, and I need to note, we, as much as possible, try to get everybody in the same room to record our episodes. Obviously, right now, that's not an option. We recorded this separated in different areas using different technology, and all of us were in our respective homes. I spent a fair amount of the interview just hoping my dogs wouldn't start barking. But that means that you can hear some differences in sound in the presence of home life going on behind us from time to time. I hope it adds to the witness of the time we're living in. Here's our talk with DG Hollums of the Order of the Trinity. These days, DG, do you kind of position yourself as being like an online minister or monk with the Order of the Trinity?
Yeah, I actually call myself a neo-friar, self-proclaimed neo-friar. I call myself an extroverted contemplative. and of course, I'm a United Methodist elder pastor, too.
What does that mean to you to be a neo-friar? Like, unpack that for us a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, if you're a neo-monastic, the monastics would still tend to want to cloister and go into the convents, you know, for nuns and monasteries for monks, and they would want to be cloistered and stay kind of in their own little thing. The thing I always loved about the friars is they're actually in the world. They want to be in the world. They want to live among the world so that they can be the hands, the feet, and the voice of Jesus. And so they're not only praying for the world, but they're also in the trenches, intentionally developing ministry and relationships with the rest of the world so they can be able to love on everyone that's there. So they still take some kind of rule of life. They still, pray the hours. They still do all the stuff, kind of stuff that the monks would do, but they are intentionally in the world. That's the reason I actually kind of like the friar piece, is because I know of so many clergy, but also laity as well, that they don't want to necessarily be moved around like the traditional United Methodist Church does with the appointment process. And they want to, you know, they want to stay in one place. They want to develop roots. They want to stay there so they can become even more effective at developing the ministries that they fall in love with, the people that they fall in love with. And so I just loved that part of it. I loved the thing that you would have a rule of life. I love the monastic piece to it, that is praying often, praying the hours, if you can pull that off. If you do the real hours, you know, like about 3 o'clock in the morning kind of thing. But yeah, I just, that's the reason I kind of want to differentiate between neo-friar and neo-monastics, is just because I love the friar understanding a little bit more out there instead of in here.
Yeah, that wasn't something that I really understood before, that a friar was a person who was more in the world. And certainly now that I think about some of the historical friars that we've witnessed, right. You know, that makes a lot more sense. Like Friar Tuck all of a sudden makes a lot more sense.
Friar Tuck wasn't in his monastery the whole time. He's drinking his beer with people in the forest.
Right. So what are some of the things what is the ministry that you're bringing into the world? Tell us about that a little bit.
While I'm here in Austin, Texas, which I love Austin too, I just realized that since I'm not, you know, the traditional senior pastor or associate, and I've done church planting in the past, and I still have a little bit of that DNA in me, I really got to the point where I just said, you know what? I think the world is changing. I'm not sure if the model we have for the United Methodist Church currently is going to really be sustainable, just by looking at the number. Under the age of clergy that we have now, and how much fewer under 35 clergy we have, and things like that. And I just said, you know, what could it look like? What would it look like for the future? And could there be something that could come along what is currently here to be a transition piece to it all and for it all? I had heard a lot of clergy that are my around my age, and I'm in my early 40s, that were basically saying some of the things I had experienced, you know, lots of pain, lots of hurt by the church and from the church, not only from people above you, but also laity in the churches you're in. It was really palatable how much pain was out there. And so I was trying to figure out what would a community look like for people who need community, but they are also clergy in the Methodist Church, and they really don't feel like there's nothing there anymore, or maybe they just can't see what could be there for them. And so with that said, I needed it just as much as everyone else did too. I wanted to create whatever that community could look like and be like that would go along with my loves. And my loves are, I think I told you guys, I consider myself to be an extroverted contemplative. Because I still have that extrovertedness, but through all of that pain and all that liminal space and all of the challenges that have happened in my life, it really did kind of start to draw me inward, so I could be able to deal with those things in a very contemplative way with God. And then, of course, while I was in Albuquerque, I developed a really dear relationship with Father Richard Rohr. And he's the one that kind of inspired me to be thinking monastically and things like that. And I love him so much. And after that time period, I just said, you know what? One of the things he said that really inspired me, and you can find the readings of it. He's put it out there in his daily email too. But he said that the monastic orders were created intentionally to be on the edge of the inside of the church. That they believed and they knew that eventually the center of the church would become insular and just only think about themselves. So they also knew that they were supposed to go and be able to be sharing the gospel and loving people and caring for people and being the hands and feet and voice of Jesus. And so they intentionally created these orders of people to be living on the edge of the inside of the church so they could be able to develop relationships with the world. People who are not a part of the church and learn their language and learn their culture and learn the ways in which they could be able to effectively be the hands and feet and voice of Jesus in the church. But they would also be able to be a voice for the people outside of the church to the church. So the church could be able to be reminded, this is not all about you. This is not, you know, you are, you know, you're not doing and being what God has called you to be in these areas kind of a thing. So it was a potentiability, like we could let the church live into the full potential of who they could be, because they're being held accountable from the monastic orders that are on the edge of the insight. Well, my first thought was Methodists don't have that. I didn't even think that there were very many places that even would want that. I mean, who wants to say, hey, guys, we need more accountability. Can we please hire some people to tell us what to do, even though we're not going to like it? You know what I'm saying? That's not a natural thing.
It's a natural Wesleyan thing, but not a natural Methodist thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely a part of our heritage and our roots. But anyway, and so I just thought to myself, man, I would love that. Like, I would love to create, and this is the very beginning part of it. I was like, I want to create a space for the remnant that, you know, even if that one tree has been destroyed, that there will still be a remnant around after the other ones have passed away. To be able to allow United Methodist Church, whatever we are, whatever we're going to become, to be something that would have a reset button and allow us to be able to truly live into who we could be when we're living into our full potential. And so I wanted to create that community. And I thought that aspect of contemplative piece of it, but also staying where you're at in your community would really echo for people who have, one, clergy that have been hurt by the church, to have a community where they are loved and encouraged and taken care of, but also to provide a spiritual mentorship aspect to that. So you could be able to, you know, find a spiritual mentor, also provide counseling from actual counselors. And then also just for the future piece, to be able to provide career counseling or career coaching for any clergy that might possibly want to start looking into bivocational needs because their church can't, you know, financially afford to pay their insurance or whatever else. And so that was the idea, is to create this community online that would have a rhythm, a holy rhythm of a rule of life, just shared loves and cares. Not a super deep one. You know, we're not going to say you have to go sell everything and, you know, and you can't ever have sex or blah, blah, blah. It's just whatever we determine as we are being formed to be our core being, then we would create that role. And we're in the process of creating that role. We're actually in the process of actually writing our own liturgy for the morning, noonday, and midday and evening prayers, and even compline too. But that's kind of where it kind of started forming, because I started hearing people say that they had been hurt by the church so badly that they don't know what to do and they don't know where to go and they have no community. And then I started hearing the same thing from laity. Mm-hmm. And then I started hearing people just say, you know what, I think I'm just drawn to the daily rhythm piece. You know, I've not been hurt by anybody. I've not been hurt by the church, but I still love the church. But I want to be in a community with others that feel that way. Now, the order of elders and the order of deacons, we already have some orders in the Methodist Church, mm-hmm. obviously. And there are some other orders, too, the Order of St. Luke and a few other ones, too. But I didn't see any of them that were truly missionally minded, that were more, like I said, friar-like instead of monastic-like.
What I'm hearing a lot in your old story, and then what you offered, you're offering clergy to be a part of, you're offering now laity to be a part of, use this word reset. And I think that kind of goes along a little bit with how you described yourself as an extroverted contemplative in this kind of battle of the two, but kind of two things that seem to be at odds, maybe. They don't naturally go together, right, but they can work beautifully together. I feel like right now, you know, we're sitting here and it is March 30th, and this is the third week that I've been working from home. My wife's been working from home. Our country and our world is kind of shut down, and we're doing a reset. I'm having conversations with pastors often going, how do I do this? How do I pastor in this? Yes. And so I'd love for you just to speak to that. Like, you know, in this, whatever this is, you know, I think we're going to look back and, you know, history is going to be dated by this to some degree. I don't know what it's going to look like. I think the church is going to look different after this. This idea of when this is over, the doors of the church are just going to be flooded. I don't think people are going to want to gather back like that for a little while. So as we, as just a world, really, mm-hmm. are hitting the reset button, speak to some of those things that have become good rhythms and holy practices that you have found in this ministry and in this walk of life that can help us.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, it was when I was first thinking about this, I was thinking about anyone who felt like they didn't have a place after the Methodist Church's General Conference. That honestly was one of the main drivers for this, is because I saw my beloved church either splitting or having massive, massive issues. And there were going to be a lot of people that were going to be in the fallout that did not feel like they had a community to be a part of.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to provide some kind of community for that piece. And that was the original piece of it. And then COVID-19 happened. And I just said, okay, I can't just wait until all the liturgies are done before I start doing, you know, my morning and midday and evening prayers. We've just got to start doing it. We're just going to do it. And that's when I started actually doing the prayers. I mean, I've been doing the morning, midday and evening prayers, even comp line. Oh gosh, I've been doing that for years and years and years now. And it is the only one single thing that has sustained me with my life, with going through all the pain and the challenges I've had in ministry, with going through all the joys and the loves of ministry as well, is that holy daily rhythm has truly transformed me in my life, period. And so I wanted to be able to share that holy rhythm. I think holy rhythms are lacking in the world that we live in today, other than just the natural ones we have, which is sleep and eat and, you know, use the bathroom and go to work or something. But to be able to have that intentionality, and anyone who's ever visited the Abbey of Gethsemane there in Kentucky or some other abbey, and they've visited and they've actually been a part of that rhythm, here's the reset piece. If you ever go to the Abbey of Gethsemane, where Thomas Merton was there in Kentucky, one of the first things they tell all the new people is you probably need to sleep for about 3 days, because 90% of the people in the U.S., they don't know what rest is. They really don't understand Sabbath. They don't know what rest is, and they probably need to rest before they'll ever be able to hear from or be sensitive enough to the leading of the Holy Spirit. And so they encourage everyone to sleep for the first 3 days before they ever start going to the hours and praying the hours with the monks and stuff like that. And I think that is so true. And I think that we have an opportunity right now with COVID to be that reset. God is saying, I want you to rest enough to be able to hear me, to be able to know who you are and know that you can love me by loving others. And we're going to have a reset. You're not going to have busyness as the badge to wear that you're so proud of because you're so that awesome. You don't have any excuses anymore. You know, it's like the time has, God has pressed pause for you to be able to listen and to rest and get to a place where you can be able to hear. And I just think that that's the most beautiful part of what's going on with COVID. Yes, there are people dying, and yes, there is mourning and there is loss, and there is this massive global understanding of anxiety and loss and grief. But that's never been anything new for Christianity, authentic Christianity. that's pretty darn biblical. That not everything is hunky dory, and we're not all living in beautiful mansions. You know, it is something that God has said, no, but I am in the midst of it with you, and you're never alone. And that's why I kind of start out every one of my prayers that I pray with people, you know, on Facebook Live. I started off with, I get in there somewhere. I love you, and you are not alone. We are in this together. We're all connected, whether the world wanted you to let you know that or not. But now it is letting us all know how connected we truly are, and all the more reason for us to be able to have that pause and that reset, and to be rejuvenated, to be able to find that rhythm back in our lives, of a holy rhythm, not just a work and a societal rhythm, but a truly holy rhythm.
In a way, we're all kind of occupying the space that you talked about earlier, with that pull between the inward focus and the outward focus. Like our personal lives are now like really we are forced to ask the question, like how do our personal lives meet the rest of the world, right? And that's something that as you had noted, we'd been struggling with in church. And so you have kind of taken what can be for many people a very personal practice in prayer, and for so many more folks, a very private practice in prayer, and brought that into kind of this public realm. Can you explain for us, like, what is the rhythm that you have going on through the Order of the Trinity?
Well, I mean, currently it really is just a daily prayer. And since I'm both bivocational, I mean, I work right now full-time at Apple here, one of their campuses, or actually the second largest campus they have here in Austin, Texas. And since I'm bivocational and I am completely blessed to be able to work from home and still have a paycheck, because, I mean, when I'm, just as a side note, when I look back, when I was the clergy in the Methodist Church, full-time, you know, senior pastor, I would have flipped my lid by the third week of not being able to have offering plates passed in the church budget taken care of. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I know there are so many clergy that is their heart right now, is they are completely freaking out. Because, I mean, they don't live paycheck to paycheck in a church. They live offering plate to offering plate. Very few churches can be able to handle, you know, a sick day. Very few churches can handle a let's not meet on a Sunday for 5 weeks in a row. Unless some just miraculous God just tells everyone to start giving online, they're got to be freaking out by now. But anyway, but that daily rhythm right now currently with the Order of the Trinity is a daily prayer. So I have one prayer, and I try to make them really super long. I don't want to make them an hour each or something like that, just because I want this to be able to continue back when we're all going back to work and things like that. I do about a 15 to 30 minute prayer in the morning. I try to do it around sunrise here in Austin. I try to do another one in midday, you know, sometime hopefully in the perfect world between noon and one. And then I try to do another one in the evening around sunset, which is right now in Texas is between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. But I am bivocational. So there are some times where I have a meeting I have to go to, and that just means I have to push it back or make it a little bit earlier or something else like that. So, but the idea was, is that, you know, that this daily rhythm, not only are we doing it live, yes, which is beautiful, and if you can be there live, it's great, but it's okay. I mean, I'm still posting it, so you can be able to get to it whenever you need to get to it. And the idea, the dream, is that we have a website and even an app that would tell your Apple Watch or your Samsung Watch or whatever else, the Google Watch, that it would remind you of the prayer times so that you could be able to press one button and then you could be able to view that 10, 15 minute prayer and then go on your day. And the people who have already been a part of this prayer time have already, you know, sent me private messages saying, oh my gosh, like you are helping me reset my day every morning, every midday, and every evening. And so it's providing little tiny mini resets for them to be able to refocus and recenter their heart to remind them the purpose of who they are as a person of faith and a follower of our God. And to be able to have those mini reminders every single day is truly powerful, and it's life-changing. But what I was wanting to do ultimately was just saying, hey, we'll just start the bar really low. So if you can only make it to one, you know, if you can only have one prayer time, then, you know, here'll be the liturgy for you. But if you can make it to all three, this is what the morning liturgy would look like, midday and evening. And if you can make it to two, then do this, you know, whatever else. Ideally, in a perfect world, we're going to have a website and an app that you can be able to download and join the order to be able to do that. Right now, we just lack funding. I mean, honestly, I would do this full time if I could just get paid to take care of my family. But finding people to really see this is difficult for people who are just in the traditional ways of thinking. This is really hard to get their mind around, even though it's extremely ancient and we're just using the technology to do it instead of building a monastery.
Right. And I think that's what I've seen really coming out of, I'm a Methodist pastor, and I'm 30, I'll be 31 here soon. And okay, I've seen in my generation, like my age group coming up, this hunger for some of those contemplative practices as we move forward, and actually exactly what you're saying, just doing them in new ways. So the message and the why is exactly the same, but how we're doing it, how we're reaching people, that's going to look a little different as time goes on.
Right.
And I think I'm seeing that right now in talking to people about in this time of space, and a space that we don't know when the end will be. What are the practices and what are the rhythms that you can create? And so I'm so thankful that there are people like you who are resourcing the church, not just the Methodist church, but pastors. You're being a pastor to pastors and to the global church, that in this time they're finding those rhythms through what you're doing. It's a huge help for the church.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. And it's kind of what I've been, with the church that we attend here, Bethany United Methodist Church, I've just been trying to tell the clergy staff, just saying, hey, I know you guys are always thinking about what's going to happen Sunday morning. I mean, that's what all the churches are doing. It's like, oh my gosh, we've got to worship on Sunday morning. We've got to get this stuff done, whether it's off my phone or my computer or with, screencasts and everything else. I just want to be a supplement to that. So if anyone needs to be able to have small, little, mini refocusing sessions, which is what I call prayer, literally just to attempt to be in the moment with God, and to acknowledge and to allow God to make God's presence known to us. It is so, so, so powerful for people to be able to have that. But you're right. That's exactly right. I mean, that's, I just meet so many people that are the almost done with church. And here is, I'm just want to provide a way to where the almost done can be the remnant for whatever the church is going to be and look like in the future. And again, I don't think this needs to be a replacement. I think this is just a middle piece with whatever is going to happen in the future, at least in the Methodist church, but also in the big church, whether you're a follower of, that we're going to be starting another or in the middle of another Reformation or not.
DG, what are some of the resources that you pull on to help guide your prayer time?
Yeah, no, that's great. Right now, like I said, we're in the process of creating a liturgy. We're in the process of writing the rule, which I would love feedback from anybody and everybody if they have a favorite liturgy or favorite rule. But right now, what I'm doing is the morning and the evening prayer times. I'm doing that from a book from a community called the Northumbria Community in the UK, and it's called Celtic Daily Prayer or Daily Celtic Prayer from the Northumbria Community, and they have a really cool, beautiful morning, midday, and evening and compline liturgies. And they have daily readings to go with it and everything else like that, and scripture readings. And then for the midday, I love Shane Claiborne and Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove. Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove has been in my house and I fed him a hamburger. He was just one of the nicest, calmest, chillest guys you've ever met in your life. Very monastic kind of, you could tell he was a monastical kind of guy. But they wrote a book I called Common Prayer and Liturgy for Ordinary Radicals that I've always loved. Kind of, I don't know if it's kind of just dissipated from being back when the neo-monastic movement stuff was really popular, 15 years ago. But but they have written a little tiny book that has a morning, midday, and evening prayers. And I love their midday prayer because their midday prayer, the prayers that you're praying are the basics. You got the Sermon on the Mount, you got the fruit of the Spirit. It's just a shorter but really thick midday prayer liturgy that I absolutely love. And I always add, lately I've been adding the Wesley Covenant prayer because I still think that's my favorite prayer period into that liturgy as well. So, but like I said, I'm still writing our own liturgy. But for now, those are the resources that we're leaning on for the actual liturgies of the prayer times. And as far as the writing the rule, I mean, goodness, I've grabbed so many different rules of life from so many different, from so many different groups that I'm just kind of weeding through all those and finding out which ones have, the Abbey of Gethsemane there with the Trappists, they have such a high love of hospitality. That's why you can actually go there and stay there for free and they'll just take a donation. That it's a part of their rule of life. So what would that rule of life look like if you were very missionally minded And, you know, and one of the things I want to put in the rule is that you are involved in some kind of ministry in your local setting, whatever is your passions. And then we, of course, we provide different areas for people with those, you know, like if your passion is homelessness, or, you know, women's rights or women's issues or, you know, battered, whatever else. You know, you can find different areas, and these are people from all over the country in a perfect world that would be going to the website to share, you know, best practices, share ideas, share challenges, to be loving one another and caring for one another. And then, of course, we would also be able to provide, you know, spiritual mentors and counseling and career coaches too. But yeah, that's the resources that I'm using currently right now.
So for this time that we're in right now, where so many of us are looking for the ways that we can really intentionally engage with the world, where can we hook up with your community online?
Yeah. So, all I have right now is just kind of like a placeholder website. It's just, you know, the thing that you can do through GoDaddy or whatever, but, that's just, www.orderofthetrinity.com. And then if you go to our Facebook page, and their Facebook page is facebook.com/theorderofthetrinity, then for some reason that one, the other one's already taken, so I had to change the Order of the Trinity on Facebook. But Facebook is by far the place that is the most interactive aspect of it all. If you go to the website, you can sign up for an email list. We're still right now, I mean, this is, even though I've been working on it for a year and a half, it's a slow process. So we're still, I have a fiscal sponsor, so that part's good. If people wanted to give to us, they could, although I don't have a button anywhere for it. But yeah, right now, website, www.orderofthetrinity.com, and then facebook.com/theorderofthetrinity.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and inspiring us and helping us, not just in this time of this weird space that we're in with COVID-19, but for life and helping us connect closer and deeper with Christ.
Hey, listener, thanks for being a part of this episode too. You can find links to the Order of the Trinity on our website. That's umc.org/rethinkchurch. We'll also put some links to some of the prayer resources DG mentioned up there too. Be safe out there. In April 2020, we hope you're staying home and that even there, you're finding a sense of God's presence in your everyday. Peace.